How would you feel if you were 14 years old, a very young teenager, very talented, had lots of friends, known by the Pope of the Catholic Church and other important people, and then sold by your father? That's right, not sent on vacation, not sent to camp for 3 weeks, but sold by your father to a man who wanted a servant in his home that could play music. And to make matters worse, the man you were sold to lived in a completely different country with a completely different language and owned a big estate way out in the country, away from all other teenagers and kids your age. How would you like to find the girl of your dreams? A girl as madly in love with you as you are with her, only to have her father refuse to let you marry her. How would it be to have to wait 20 more years before you got over your broken heart to find another girl whom you could love, only to have her die a year after you were married while giving birth to your first child? How would you feel if you were known in your lifetime as the father of the piano, but years later have nearly all your compositions forgotten by everyone, except for a few short works? Of course, I don't expect you to be able to feel all of those things, but such incidents were some of the burdens and heartaches that Mutius Philippus Vincentius Franciscus Xaverius Clementi experienced in his lifetime. With experiences like these, how do you suppose his music would sound? Cheerful, sad, melancholy, happy? Let's listen to the first movement of one of his most famous pieces and see, the Piano Sonatina in C major. Muzio Clementi was the oldest of seven children. His proud father was a craftsman that shaped silver into beautiful things. He was called a silversmith. He was born in Rome, Italy, on the 23rd of January, 1752. Johann Sebastian Bach had died 2 years previous. Handel would still be kicking around for another 7 years. Franz Joseph Haydn was having his last fling as a teenager, and Mozart wouldn't be brought into existence for another 4 years when he was born. Even though Muzio Clementi was 18 years older than Beethoven, he outlived Beethoven by 5 years. During their lifetimes, all four of these composers would come into contact with each other: Clementi, Mozart, Beethoven, and Haydn. Only two became close friends, Mozart and Haydn. Muzio Clementi showed an interest in music as a little boy. This delighted his father, who found him a good teacher. The teacher also happened to be a relative. When Muzio was 6 years old, he had already learned to sight sing using solfege, much like you do with the magic of inner hearing. His progress continued until he was pretty good at both the organ and the harpsichord. The piano was still largely unheard of at this time. At 11 years of age, he was able to study with one of Rome's great music teachers of the day. His name was Carpini. It was at this time that Clementi's friends encouraged him to write a mass. This was quite a large piece of music for the church service. Without checking first with his teacher, Clementi did it. When it was performed, it was greeted with such enthusiasm that news of the exciting new 11-year-old composer reached the ears of his own teacher, Carpini. Carpini called Clementi to him and asked that it be performed again so that he could hear it. The very dry, prideful, humorless Carpini listened intently as the piece was performed again. "Hmph," he said after the piece was performed. Carpini rarely gave compliments to anyone but himself, but he called Clementi over and said, "Why didn't you tell me that you were going to write a mass? You did a very good job, but if you had talked to me first, I would have made it even better." Shortly before his 14th birthday, Clementi got a job as a church organist. Yes, sir, things seemed to be going very well for the young teenage composer and organist. It was then that a tourist heard him play. He was a very wealthy Englishman tourist who wanted some music in his own home. Peter Beckford was his name. Peter himself was not very fond of music, but his wife was a very good harpsichord player. Besides, even if you didn't like music in those days, it was fashionable for the wealthy to keep a small orchestra in their home for entertainment. Peter thought he could kill three birds with one stone, provide some musical entertainment for his family and friends, save money by only acquiring one person rather than a whole orchestra, and still be able to keep up with the Joneses by having music in their mansion, as all the fashionable people did. So Clementi was sold by his father for a fixed sum of money and taken to England as a servant to Peter Beckford. You might ask, what father would sell his own son? It may sound pretty cruel to us, but perhaps Clementi's father felt he was doing the best he could for his boy. The Catholic Church at this time was not flush for cash. Composers were hardly making anything in Rome. To Clementi's father, he saw it as an opportunity to send his son to one of the world's most powerful nations with a man that could afford to give him a life of ease and comfort, not to mention the money Clementi's father would obtain for himself. So, in the interest of furthering Clementi's career, his father sold him. What an exciting adventure for a 14-year-old boy. Under the terms of agreement between Peter Beckford and his father Clementi, the boy was to work in the Beckford Manor until the boy was 21 years of age, at which time he would be set free. The Beckford estate was 100 miles to the southwest of London. It was a beautiful estate with a mansion set at the foot of a hill, forests all around. At the Beckford estate, Clementi was not provided with any further musical training. He played for his master and his guests every once in a while. The rest of the time, he was left to himself to do as he pleased. Think for a moment. What would you do if you were a teenager? You didn't have to go to school or work. Your clothes and meals were all provided, and you only had to play the harpsichord every once in a while for guests. Stop the tape for a moment if you need the time, and write what you would do if you had all that time. Would you practice? Would you read? Would you watch TV all day? Play basketball all day? What would you do? What do you suppose the teenage Clementi did? Well, Clementi didn't become as good as he was by sitting around watching squirrels run through the forest. He set for himself a strict schedule of lonely study, broken only by occasional performances for Beckford and his guests. Years later, one of his own students once asked what he did with all of those free hours on the Beckford estate. This is what the student reported.
"He devoted 8 hours a day to the harpsichord. Sometimes he would work 12 to 14 hours a day in order to remain on top of the daily schedule he chose for himself. It was the works of Johann Sebastian Bach, Carl Philipp Emanuel Bach, Handel, and Scarlatti that he practiced and studied continually. This he did from two different standpoints, that of finger technique and that of instrumental composition. Frequently, he would rise even on the cheerless, cold winter mornings to read if he had light, or to practice on his harpsichord if light as well as fire were unobtainable."
Now that is dedication and a commitment to excellence, isn't it? To get up and practice on cold winter mornings, even when there wasn't any light. to practice the harpsichord in the dark. In 1774, 2 years before the American Declaration of Independence, Clementi was freed from his obligation as a servant to Peter Beckford. He immediately moved to London, where for 5 years he took odd jobs as a musician and giving occasional concerts on the harpsichord. After 5 years, he was able to find a publisher to print 6 sonatas that he had written. These became very popular, and things began to look up for the young man. Concerts became more frequent. One musical journal published this review of his playing. It said, "Clementi, an Italian, has composed some set of lessons which abound in passages so peculiar and difficult that it is evident that they must have been practiced for years preceding their publication. We particularly allude to the succession of octaves with which he has crammed into his lessons. Mr. Clementi executes these exceedingly well and is a most brilliant performer." With all of this success, Clementi thought it was time to conquer Europe. In 1780, at the age of 28, he began his tour playing for such notables as Marie Antoinette and the Emperor Joseph II. Emperor Joseph II was the not-so-helpful patron of Mozart. As a matter of fact, while Clementi was in Vienna, the Emperor Joseph II thought it would be a great fun thing to do to stage a musical contest between Clementi and Mozart. Vienna loved music competitions as much as the Romans loved their gladiator contests in the Colosseum. It was the big-time wrestling of the day. If you were invited to the musical playoff between Mozart and Clementi, who would you root for? Would you hope Clementi would win, or Mozart? Before the contest began, Mozart complained the pianos were in bad need of repair. The emperor, confident of Mozart's success, told him not to worry and had Mozart play on the worst of the 2 pianos as a show of kindness to the foreign pianist, Clementi. The emperor invited the Grand Duchess and Duke of Russia to the event. Mozart wrote of the outcome in a letter to his father.
"After we had stood on ceremony long enough, the emperor declared that Clementi ought to begin. He improvised and then played a sonata. The emperor then turned to me, 'Fire away!' I improvised and played variations. The Grand Duchess produced some sonatas by Paisiello, of which I had to play the allegros and Clementi, the andantes and rondos. We then selected a theme from them and developed it on 2 pianofortes. The instrument was out of tune and 3 of the keys were stuck. I did the best I could, and I have it from a very good source that he was extremely pleased with me."
The contest fell in Mozart's lap as the winner. Joseph was proud of his musical gladiator. As time went on, though, Mozart talked more and more of Clementi's playing. Very little of his opinions were favorable. 1.5 years after the contest, he wrote,
"Clementi is a charlatan, a quack, and a fraud, like all Italians. He writes presto over a sonata, or even prestissimo in 2-2 time, and plays it himself allegro in 4-4 time. I know this is the case, for I have heard him do so. What he really does well are his passages in thirds, but he sweated over them day and night in London. Apart from this, he can do nothing. Absolutely nothing, for he has not the slightest expression or taste, still less feeling."
Mozart also expressed the sentiment to his father that Clementi did not have a dime's worth of taste or feeling. "In short," said Mozart, "he is a mere machine that plays octaves and thirds with great speed." It must be remembered that Mozart's opinion of any other living composer or pianist but himself and Haydn was not very high. However, comments such as these by Wolfgang served to hurt Clementi's career later in his life. It must be said to Clementi's credit that in turn he had nothing but esteem for Mozart. It shows great humility and a certain nobleness of character to praise your competitor behind his back. And this is what Clementi did. He recalled years later that it was not until he heard Mozart play at the piano that he had ever heard anyone play with such spirit and grace. After 2 more years in Vienna and another year in France, Clementi turned home for London, where he began teaching. After a year in London, he headed back for France. In France, at the age of 31, he met the girl of his dreams. She was reportedly very beautiful. The only problem was her father. He did not want his daughter marrying an Italian from London. The two lovers consulted together and decided that if their father didn't want them married, that was his problem, and so they eloped together to a place where you didn't need the father's consent to marry, the Las Vegas of France. Well, the father turned out to be pretty stubborn. When he learned of the elopement, he followed them, went to the authorities for help, and got his daughter back. Clementi was heartbroken. What would you do in a situation like that? Elope again? Run away to Siberia? Join the French Foreign Legion? Well, it may be a little unusual, but Clementi went to the public library and worked on mathematical problems for 3 weeks. After recovering from his grief, Clementi made his way home again to London. In London, Clementi began working to establish himself as a composer, performer, and teacher. Things were going great. He published 26 sonatas and began conducting his own symphonies. Then Franz Joseph Haydn came for a visit to London. Haydn was such a hit that Clementi was inadvertently snubbed out of the composition scene. No one wanted to hear Clementi or any other London composer, only Haydn. Turning disaster into triumph, Clementi plunged himself into teaching the piano. He became a celebrated piano teacher and trained some of the world's best pianists at that time. Clementi also found another talent. During the 1790s, while Napoleon was conquering Europe, Clementi set out to conquer the business world. He turned his efforts to music publishing and piano building. As a businessman, he became very wealthy through frugal living and wise investments. On a visit to Europe to sell pianos that his company made, Clementi, now 50 years old, found another girl that he fell in love with. She was only 18 years old, but apparently a very good musician. She had a brilliant mind like Clementi's. They were married in 1804. Soon they were expecting a child. 1 year after the marriage, his wife, Carolyn, died while giving birth. Of this event, Clementi wrote to a friend,
"My fatal and irreparable loss you have no doubt heard of. God alone can give me strength to bear it."
Leaving the infant in charge of his mother-in-law, Clementi resumed his travels. 6 years later, Clementi thought it was time to try getting married again. He married an English woman named Emma. By the age of 60, Clementi had 2 sons and 2 daughters. At this time in his life, he was greeted with great respect among the English public, and his business continued to flourish. After years of hard work and at the age of 78, Clementi retired to the country and lived happily ever after, which was only 2 more years. After a brief illness in March of 1832, Clementi died. If you ever visit London, you can see where he is buried in Westminster Abbey, just across the street from the famous Big Ben clock on the Parliament building.